Well, hello everyone. I was not expecting to do another Office Hours this week, but it's fortuitous in a way because it means I get to catch up on the super thanks that we didn't do on Tuesday when I had Dan on to talk about the tariffs. Well, a lot of the stuff we discussed is already quickly out of date because, of course, Trump cucked. He cucked earlier on today. And I'll explain exactly what happened in a moment. But as people are trickling in, welcome. I'll just remind everyone, do buy courses at the Academic Agency. It's promo code Mandy. It's the spring sale, 25% off. And then when we come back, we're going to have a pretty in-depth look at what happened to the U.S. Treasury bond market, why Trump blinked because of the price of U.S. Treasury yields going spiking upwards as various investors and countries sold off their bonds. Before we get all of that, let's have promo code Mandy, and then we'll get us up to speed.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Promo code Mandy. 25% off all courses. Come on down. Academic Agency. Every single course. 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
I've spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
All right, so I'm gonna share a number of screenshots here to explain what has taken place. Let us start with this graph here. So this is the yield on a 10-year U.S. government bond, and you can see that the tariffs were announced, and then suddenly yesterday they started going upwards at an alarming rate, which is not usually what has happened. Basically, what happened is that because of all the uncertainty created by Trump's actions, what happened yesterday was that the tariff regime that Trump had announced came into effect, right? So he'd announced them on so-called Liberation Day, okay? But they actually came into effect on the 9th of April. That was yesterday. And basically the markets did well. That is what happened to the US Treasury bond. It was likened in the media to what happened to Liz Truss. In fact, the entire media was calling it Trump's Liz Truss moment or Liz Truss style. It has been speculated on who did this, but from what I could find, it was a Japanese hedge fund who started offloading their treasury bonds. I also listened to Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. And one of the things that Alistair Campbell mentioned in passing that he watched the big Oval Office thing with Netanyahu, went to the Oval Office and did this press conference with Trump, and Campbell watched the entire hour of it, and he said, well, Trump was talking about baseball and all sorts of nonsense for most of it, but some journalists asked him something and Trump casually suggested that the US may welsh on some of its debts and so on. For whatever reason, the world lost confidence in it lost trust in the US yesterday, okay, and it's a pretty significant thing, right? This is not some small event that has happened. The US Treasury bonds are known as a safe haven asset, okay? And it relies on its status as a safe haven asset, relies on the fact that America is a trusted, good faith actor in the system, and it's not going to do things like default on its loans. It's not going to not honor its debt obligations and so on and so forth. So when this started moving yesterday, and it started going in that direction, Trump was basically forced to back down and announce a 90-day pause on all of this. Okay. Now, his surrogates and his spokesman and his defenders online have tried to spin this around as an example of the art of the deal, of Trump's 4D chess genius, of this was all part of the plan all along. Absolute and complete bollocks, okay? Absolute and complete bollocks was it part of the plan. And one can show that it was not part of the plan by just looking at what Trump and his surrogates were saying just a couple of days ago. This was on the 6th of April, 3 days before the tariffs went into effect. And Trump was like, no, I am not going to pause all of the tariffs, right? We're going to need to experience a little bit of pain. And if you're worried about this, you're a panican. You're a panican, right? You're a panican. It's Liberation Day. Manufacturing is coming back to America. Globalism as we know it is over. Let's bloody laugh at the boomers, right? Let's laugh at the boomers because their stronks are going down. Do you remember all of that? Like, we don't live in an egg. We can see what people are saying. Right, so the messaging all week was boomers are idiots for worrying about their pensions. Who cares about that? We're getting our country back. All the memes of the jobs coming back. It needs to be a little bit of pain. And it's perfectly encapsulated by these memes that people have made. My buddy Max Tempers, I'm adding tariffs, this will create jobs. I'm removing tariffs out of the deal, right? Or even better, this one. Oh, there's the art of the deal. The panicans were wrong. Art of the deal, panic, right? I'm fed up with the go-round, guys, okay? I'm not putting up with this bullshit anymore. All right? Round and round we go. This was one of the biggest U-turns in American history, okay? One of the most significant shocks to Americans' kind of economic status as a hegemon. Again, in the history that has existed as an order, an absolute meltdown happened. He was forced to back down to cuck, and now he's presenting it as a win? Absolutely not. And in fact, there are people who literally embody this, right? Benny Johnson, losing money means nothing. Digital ones and zeros, in the end, you won't miss any of it. Losing your country costs you everything, blah, blah, blah. US stock market adds 4 trillion. Panicans right now, right? So they're actually like, this is not a straw man. This is actually the contradiction in the messaging at every stage of the way, okay? And it's bollocks. I have always told you, I shoot straight. I don't like bullshit. And people are bullshitting you right now. If they're trying to present this as a win, it wasn't a win. It was a catastrophic failure, a catastrophic cuck by Trump, a blink right in the face of genuine consequences to his erratic actions. That happened. It wasn't a plan, right? If it was a plan, all of his surrogates wouldn't have been saying, oh, don't be a panican. They wouldn't have been saying these are here to stay. I've got no intentions. Literally, it wasn't even it didn't even last a day, right? Somebody said, oh, Trump's trade war didn't last a week. It didn't last a day. It lasted half a day, right? It was about lunchtime when he is like, shit, I'm gonna pull this, because if I don't, it's gonna completely wreck the American economy, okay? Because of the mass selling off of US Treasury bonds, okay? I mean, and the amount of cope, this guy, like Scott Bessent, the guy who, Dan, who I had on the show, this is the dude with the master plan, according to him. For the last four decades, Wall Street has grown wealthier than ever before, and it could continue to grow and do well. But for the next few years, it's Main Street's turn. It's Main Street's turn to hire workers. It's Main Street's turn to drive investment. It's Main Street's turn to restore the American dream, said Scott Bessent. Trump brags in the Oval Office that Charles Schwab made $2.5 billion today following the stock market surge. Right? Please stop your fucking bullshit quotes, copes, your nonsense. Trump did not set a trap. He's not playing 4D chess. He's just a fucking idiot, guys, okay? Right? You think, oh, trust the plan. He knows what he's doing. No, he made a gambit. The markets blew up. It went, the uncertainty created conditions where he was forced to capitulate to the markets. Okay? There is absolutely no way you can paint what happened. He literally said he issued the pause because people were yippy and afraid. Yippy and afraid. Okay? It's not a win at all. It is not a win. The only people who think it's a win who do not actually work for Donald Trump in his PR department are literally 80 IQ morons at this point. Okay? He threw the fact that the US Treasury bonds are a safe haven asset into crisis, just like Liz Truss did back when Kwasi Kwarteng was she was forced to resign over that. Okay. Trump did that, but because it's America, not just Britain, it was on the brink of causing a global catastrophe for the entire world economy. It is easily, as I said, the biggest MAGA L of all time. Okay. Any conception of competence or of Trump as a strong man, or it's all gone out the window, because he stood up in front of the entire world, threatened 190 countries with tariffs, and cucked within one day. After all of this talk about standing up for the little people against Wall Street and, you know, bringing back American jobs and yada, yada, yada. Absolute bullshit. Okay? This guy summed it up pretty well. Financially literate people, if we don't do X, the economy is in real trouble. MAGA, panicans, shut up. Stupid boomers with your pensions, worried. I have blah, 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 blah. Trump literally watched the markets. Oh, shit, I better do something. And then MAGA's like, oh, what a win. What a fucking 4D chess genius. People don't understand how much credibility the entire MAGA project has lost over this. Okay. And if you're still apologizing for this, you should very quickly think, like, I better stop being a moron and coming up with cope justifications for this. Okay. It was a gambit and it didn't go well. Right, you're allowed to still like Trump and say, yeah, this was a fuck up, okay? And it wasn't just a little fuck up, it was a really, really big one, okay? And then on top of that, right, now let's put the context. You almost crashed the global financial system, and in particular, you almost crashed global confidence in the US economy and in the America's ability to honor its debt obligations, okay? That's what Trump did. On exactly the same day, the White House put out a tweet saying, let him cook, with a snorting face on it. Credibility is one of those things, once you lost it, you can never get it back, okay? You can never get it back. You can't declare a trade war on the entire world and then cuck within a week, right? And not think that that doesn't have consequences. There is absolutely no way to gaslight what we have just witnessed as a win. It is a catastrophic failure of enormous proportions. Now, we're going to go into some other people's analysis, and I'll do some commentary in a second. But the bottom line is, what we have witnessed, I mean, it is unbelievable how massive an L this is for Trump and his supporters. Okay, and there's just no way of spinning it or coping it or saying it's foot. Like, the only people who are going to believe that at this point are literally paid shills and people with double digit IQ. Okay, Peter Schiff, who I watched in an interview earlier on, said if Trump really wanted to use the threat of his tariffs to negotiate deals, he substantially weakened his bargaining position by demonstrating how much damage the US would suffer by imposing them. By floating the Hindenburg of trial balloons, Trump reduced himself to a paper tiger. Right? Now, let's not forget that on the morning that Trump cucked, the EU announced that they were going to war into a trade war with America and impose retaliatory sanctions. Okay, the EU, a very significant economic bloc in the world. China, obviously, we'll talk about it in a second. The fact is, if you have a look at the sequence of events, they retaliated. And later that same day, Trump had to climb down and say, actually, EU, do you know what? I know we've... Just joking, guys. You can't fucking do that, okay? You can't play stupid games when you're the president of America like that and then expect afterwards to be taken seriously or for people to believe it was a win, okay? You started a trade war with all of your allies. They retaliated, then you cucked. That is the sequence of events that happened here. There is no way of spinning it, right? We'll get on to China and what's going to happen next in a moment. But the bottom line is, I don't want to hear any copes. Okay, I just don't want to hear them anymore. And if I'm feeling this way, there'll be thousands, millions of others who also feel this way. Okay, and increasingly, I can actually use it as an IQ test to see who's still playing with a full deck. And who is either one, paid off, or two, literally snorting copium like Scarface snorts coke, or Vladimir Zelensky snorts coke. All right, so let's get on to some of the nitty gritty here. I have some videos I'm going to play, and in the time honored tradition, I will pause those videos for comment when I think necessary. I've picked two from LBC, I've picked one from this guy Daniel Davis, and I've picked a little bit of this debate with Peter Schiff and some MAGA apologist who thought this was a great idea, okay? It's really important to realize, okay, and to see straight what has happened this week. He stood up, he tried to do a strong thing, didn't work, he was forced to back down. That is what happened. Wasn't Super 4D genius chess. It wasn't grand strategy. It wasn't the plan all along. It was, as I said, the tariffs went into effect 9 a.m. that morning. And by lunchtime, he shat himself, basically. And all of his Goldman Sachs billionaire mates were being like, shit, Donald, you better do something. And he was like, yeah, oh, okay. All right, Jamie Dimon. I trust you here, buddy. Fuck. Okay, now he needs to save face with his supporters. I get it. People need to cope and tell themselves lies to make themselves feel good about, you know, so that they people don't look back on what they were saying a week ago, you know, make them look like idiots. I understand the human nature element. On this channel, I just tell you the truth. And the truth is, that is what has happened. Now, one of the reasons that I'm so animated about this is because I believe that this situation not only discredits Trump and MAGA, but also discredits the right, quote unquote, around the world. Okay. It actually makes everybody look more retarded through their association with this. Now, gratefully, what I've seen is literally the only people going along with this are the hardest core MAGAtards. Okay, all of the like the European right wingers see this for what it is. All of the European populists see this for what it is. Canadian ones. I mean, I don't really see anybody not calling a spade a spade. So for that, I'm pretty grateful that you know, most people see what I see. Okay, but there is still that, you know, core of people who are just willing to justify anything Trump does through cope and bullshit. If you're a British or a European, you don't want to be on the side of trying to justify this bullshit, okay? Not only because it's not in the interest of your country, but also because your association with this actually lessens the chances of getting your own way in your own country. It is absolutely fundamentally discrediting. It is cratering to the MAGA project, okay? And it massively increases the chance of a Democrat comeback in the midterms, and also of a Democrat president down the line as well. But anyway, another really significant thing that has happened is that those people who see this clearly, okay, I mean, this is the only time in 10 years of watching stuff that I've ever seen the mainstream media converge with many kind of people who are in alternative media who just understand basic economics. Not only like I'm talking about like the libertarian sphere, people like Peter Schiff, people like Jeffrey Sachs, like all of these people immediately saw, yeah, this is going to go tits up pretty quickly. And also the mainstream media basically see this clearly. Okay, now this does not happen very often, but when you're dealing with something that is objective, something that is completely objective, like the US Treasuries market and the actions of the American president, okay, what he says on day one versus what he does on day four, these are objective facts, okay? And it's pretty important that people are able to recognize objective facts. Okay, because what's happening is most people are looking around and being like, the people who are still on board with this are fucking crazy. Okay, that is what is happening. I'm watching it up and down my timeline. Right, the quicker you get off that ship, well, you can either get off, you can either go down with that ship, or you can carry on making up bollocks to justify the actions of people who haven't got a fucking clue what they're doing. Okay. Let's have a look at LBC now, and I will pause it as necessary.
Or was he panicked and has now chosen to reverse ferret? Simon Marks, what do you think?
This was not part of the plan, Tom. There's no question about that. This is a complete 180 by a White House that has totally panicked over the last 24 hours because of the...
Remember, a couple of days ago, don't be a panician. A couple of days ago, America has changed forever. A couple of days ago, you know, what, this is like Alexander Hamilton back, baby, and all this absolute fucking wank I was subjected to, okay, when I was pointing out why this wouldn't work just a couple of days back. All of that overnight was U-turned on, and now exactly those same people are trying to sell it as a 4D chess masterpiece. Don't talk shit. Anyway, let's carry on.
Sell off in US Treasury bonds. Remember that US Treasury bonds are normally considered the safe haven for investors when they flee the stock market. And the fact that people were fleeing Treasury bonds indicated to most sentient economists in the United States that Donald Trump was taking the country into the abyss, not just a recession, but the real possibility of a Great Depression-style meltdown. And so I think you've seen Republicans over the last few hours on Capitol Hill and big businesses, Delta Airlines. We were talking earlier about Jamie Dimon of Goldman Sachs, you know, all saying to the president, you've got to do a U-turn. And you heard Scott Bessent there and Caroline Leavitt making a desperate attempt to indicate that this was all due to the courage of Donald Trump Trump's leadership, and also in the case of Caroline Leavitt, insisting, of course, that it was all the fault of the media for misconstruing the president. This is a president of the United States who last week was waxing lyrical about the American economy of the 1880s and 1890s.
Exactly, Simon Marks. So what a short space the time of a couple of weeks is, right? I remember this guy a couple of weeks ago. I was like, who is this guy? All of them just are explaining exactly what happened, okay? Just a couple of days ago, all of these same clowns were talking about replacing income tax with tariff receipts. Literally 3 days before, he paused them all.
And postulating that, like then, the United States of 2025 could end up in a position where its entire government was being funded by tariff revenues, yeah, and there would be no need income for tax. Any more
yeah,
income
exactly.
tax.
Simon, there are
he's been caught naked.
There are so many. There are so many in the Trump administration that I've watched over the last few days who have so much egg on their face.
Oh,
because
unbelievable!
They went,
yeah, so much egg on their face. Now, the question for you, bloke in the chat, you're not part of the Trump administration, are you? So there's no need for you also to have egg on your face by coping and trying to come up with, you know, speculative justifications for what the fuck these people are trying to do. You don't need egg on your face unless you are a paid minion of Donald Trump. Just admit you got it wrong.
They went onto the media and they said that this was the right thing to do. Of course, we're going to go ahead with this. The rest of the world needs to know that the US is in charge. We're going to keep these tariffs in place. There's no negotiation possible. This is the new world as we know it. And even Simon suggesting, and this is where, you know, the shark was really jumped, that the cuts made to the federal government by DOGE and the job losses that would be brought about as a result, that those people cut from those jobs would go and work in the factories that were about to come to America to start up to make textiles. What?
Yes.
What?
Like, he's not making this up, right? These fuckwits like Besant and Lutnick, you know, our beef is beautiful, your beef is weak, you know, that twat. These are the actual statements that these people have made sitting in the cabinet of America. You can't just walk all that shit back because, you know, there was a panic in the bond market. They literally came out and said all of that stuff and then had to walk it back. It's a literal laughingstock. It is a joke. If you're going to do it, follow it through. Don't say all this shit and then have to walk it back. It makes you look pathetic.
Yes, I mean, and screwing little microscrews into Apple computers and iPhones. I mean, that's what I think Howard Lutnick, the craven commerce secretary, was postulating over the weekend, which, of course, has given rise to an enormous number of memes on social media. This is the biggest U-turn American politics and the economy has witnessed in the modern era.
Anybody who says this is out of the deal or you're being a panicking will be immediately banned from this chat. Just shut the fuck up, you fuckwits. Okay? It is none of those things. It is exactly as I've laid it out and exactly as this guy has laid it out. Okay? It's not out of the deal, you fucking pillock. All right? You can't announce a 90% tariff on a country and then reduce it to 10% the next day. And then still expect to be taken seriously. What art of what fucking deal? What deal are you talking about?
And, you know, it's a little bit like, I mean, one can compare the scale of this to the ultimate defenestration of Liz Truss and her handling of the British economy along with Kwasi Kwarteng. But, of course, in the United States, there is no 1922 committee. So Republicans have no mechanism for getting rid of Donald Trump and his senior lieutenants, except to drop the arm on him and to use their business associates to say this cannot continue. Yeah. I think also, you know, the fact.
Can I just say, this is not an argument. This is not a kind of thing with two sides of it. These are the things that have happened. There is no argument one way or the other. These are just facts. All else is cope. Okay? All else is cope. Let's carry on.
fact that Rachel Reeves today was indicating that the UK was now willing to put itself out there as a stable investment haven, given that the United States has gone haywire. That cannot have played well in the corridors of power in Washington, D.C., because they could see a prominent European ally and many other countries essentially laughing at this self-inflicted wound. We talked about this on American Week last Friday when Donald Trump said a week ago, the patient has survived the surgery. The surgery was important. Now the recovery is beginning. It was elective surgery. The patient never needed to have the operation in the first place. And how he puts everything back together again after this, you know, while claiming victory. I mean, doubtless by the end of the day, he will be pointing to the soaring stock markets as an indication of triumph.
5.5% up.
Just a joke, an absolute joke. Here's another one. And then I'm going to be playing this American guy who I think is more sympathetic to Trump, incidentally, and a couple of others too. But there are many aspects of this that are worth considering, because it is not, he didn't, you know, he said, well, he put them all back down to 10%, but the ones on China remain. We'll talk more about China in the second half, but let's just deal with the fallout of this bond market. Almost crash. I mean, it was saved by the fact that he had to back down. But let's second clip here.
There's no doubt tonight that in the face of the power of the international markets, as Liz Truss found, Donald Trump has caved. There are few, and have been few, centres of political power which can match Trump in his own country, domestically speaking, politically. He has vanquished the Democratic Party. He's vanquished Congress, bent it to its will. And yet the courts, to some extent, still some centre of power against him, but not much. But in the face of the power of the markets, Donald Trump has caved. And he's done so because it was clear, in particular throughout the course of the day, forget just about the stock market reaction, which had been bad. Have a look, and we've been talking about it all day, at the reaction on the US securities, i.e. bond markets, the sell-off that has been taking place throughout the course of the day. The place, US securities, US bonds, US government borrowing, the place, the dollar, which is supposed to be the safe haven of investment when global economic times are tough. What have you seen today? A sell-off in US securities and US bonds throughout the course of the day. And I think it is that which has prompted Trump, which has made Trump, which has forced Trump to accept that he could not go on with the plan as had been previously constructed. So Trump has caved. That said, of course, he has...
Completely accurate analysis. It is clear that this cuck that happened yesterday was not, quote-unquote, part of the plan. One of the reasons it was not part of the plan is because usually when there's uncertainty like this, people actually, when the stock market is going crazy, people often react, investors often react, by parking their assets into things like US treasuries, because it's safe. It's like being, the stock market's going crazy. Well, we'll put something in a safer thing. Well, gold is one of them, right? Gold is up. Peter Schiff absolutely laughing. Gold's up like 20% or something. But another safe haven is US securities, US treasury bonds. And, you know, they park their money in there. That is not what happened yesterday, because Trump's actions had undermined its status as a safe haven asset. Right. So I reckon Bessent and all of these people were expecting a flight, right, from the stocks to the US Treasuries. Instead, what they got is a flight from US Treasury, where there was a big sell-off, which actually pushed the yields up, which means America ends up owing even more money on its deficit. All right, so let's carry on.
Has not caved in one particular area, which is this kind of contest that is taking place, a sort of tug of war, a geopolitical and economic tug of war, which is taking place.
My understanding is that it was not China selling that. There's no proof that it was China who engaged in that. My understanding is that it was some Japanese hedge fund that started the ball rolling on that. That was my understanding, although if you're a finance guy, tell me differently. There's no proof it was China. I think it was Japan or Japanese firms, at the very least, who own, I think they're the number one holders of US Treasury bonds in the world. So,
between the United States and China, we obviously saw earlier in the day, China responding to US tariffs with even greater tariffs, US responding again this evening. That, of course, still matters because no matter what Trump does with the rest of the world, in terms of the economy, of course, and tariffs on the rest of the world, the US and China together are 47% of global GDP. And they're are deeply interwoven and intertwined with each other. So tariffs going up to 125%, which presumably Beijing will respond to again, will matter and will continue to matter. But
I forgot to unmute myself. I forgot to unmute myself. What I was saying, guys, was that what I was saying is that on the stream with Dan, he talked about a stool with three legs. If you remember, there was a security leg, there was a leg where Scott Bessem wants to reduce or weaken the dollar as against all other currencies, and there was a leg where it was about manufacturing. And in fairness to Dan, the China bit has stayed, the security bit has stayed, but the other two legs look like they've been sawn off to me. And all through that debate, my contention was the manufacturing stuff, the bringing job back to America bit, the trading deficit part was bollocks. That was my starting position, that all of that was bunk and it was never going to happen. And if you remember at the end of that debate, I said, what happens in 2 weeks, right? What happens in 2 weeks when all this is it? Like when he's like, oh yeah, we're not going to do it, right? It didn't even take 2 weeks. It took half a day. It took half a day. Now he's reduced all those tariffs to 10%. All that bullshit about the trade deficit being overturned with every single country has gone out the window, right? They're talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to come to the deal. We're going to do a deal. We're going to come to negotiations, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk more about the mechanics of how that works in a second. Fact of the matter is that the manufacturing bit, the bit that the MAGAtards were going on about all week, the bit that people voted for him for, was bollocks in the long term. Okay. And even if it was his plan, he's gone back on that plan now because he's thrown it out in half a day. So anyway, let's carry on.
I think in terms of the overall picture now, in terms of facing down the US capital, facing down international global bond markets, facing down the international markets overall, there was only one winner. Trump has caved.
And of course, America has a huge amount of debt placed in China, doesn't it? And a lot of that debt is due for repayment fairly soon. So this is quite a dangerous game that Trump is playing, because if China demanded the immediate repayment of its debt on time rather than reschedule, as often happens in these matters, I mean, that could be catastrophic.
China is the second largest holder of US sovereign debt, second only to Japan. It holds $700 billion worth of US sovereign debt. And this was always, look, I think if you look across, and we're not even 3 months into the Trump presidency, which seems extraordinary, the second Trump presidency. I think the one theme that you can really see, I think, is Trump not fully understanding the limitations of US power. The United States is the world's most powerful country.
I thought this was a very good point by Lewis Goodall, Trump not understanding the limits of US power. I think that's basically true. Remember, Trump came up with all these ideas in the 1980s where America was pretty unassailable, right? 2025 now, and times have changed pretty significantly. And I think that this is what's happening. He is brushing up against the limits of his power, not just the limits of his office, but the limits of US power in the world, both geopolitically and economically. Right? He thought he could just stand up there, rattle his saber, threaten 190 countries, and the whole world would just kind of, you know, fall to its backs, right? Or show them his stomach or whatever. Didn't quite happen that way, did it? And now he has been forced into a pretty humiliating, I think, back down, in front of the entire world's population.
In the world, it's the biggest economy in the world, it's the biggest military spender in the world, biggest political power in the world, no doubt. But it cannot operate without some limitations on its power. And I think if you look in the two arenas, geopolitical power and economic power, you see the same story. In geopolitics, Trump seems to think that he can act without regard or much regard to the alliances that the United States have built up over 8 decades since the end of the Second World War. That is already having a cost right now because US allies believing that the US is not as reliable a friend as it once was. And you can see the same thing with the economic story. Trump seemed to believe that he could apply all of these tariffs, and no matter what happened in terms of the other countries applying reciprocal tariffs back, it wouldn't affect the United States terribly badly. We have seen in the space of only a week, it was only last Wednesday, a week to the day, that Trump applied these tariffs. And in the space of a week, it has already unwound because he has seen the power of the how interconnected the US economy is with the rest of the world. And indeed, the bond markets are in the United States. This is in many ways a Liz Truss moment for Donald Trump. The good thing is he's had the wisdom to actually see and unwind it before it got any worse.
Everything he just said there is true. It is basically a catastrophe for Trump. It's a major L. The only good thing he did was act when he did. Otherwise, America would be done already by now.
But he hasn't really got a quasi quartan that he can fire, I suppose. What about the EU here? Because I was listening this morning and hearing that the EU was announcing it was going to impose retaliatory tariffs. And yet we understand that the EU tariffs are going to also be reduced to 10% in this 90-day period.
The guy in the chat saying he was saying a lot of nothing. He wasn't saying a lot of nothing. Everything he said was true. Donald Trump did put tariffs on 190 nations, expecting the rest of the world to roll over for him because America, number one, rah, rah, rah. And in fact, it blew up right in his face. And now, not only has he got egg on his face, but his whole administration does. And so do all his cheerleaders. It just didn't work. He tried it and it didn't work and he cucked. Because he probably knows as well as anyone that the American people are not ready to go through the suffering that following through with his actions would have caused. Or probably more. His billionaire mates were like, look, Donald, if you do this, we're all going to be, you know, you better not do this, Goldman Sachs told him, or Jamie Dimon, or one of these people. And he was like, yeah, okay.
How can that be?
Well, Ian, look, I think the thing is, no one on the other side of the ledger wanted to see these tariffs.
The guy in the chat saying it didn't work. You have no idea what Trump was trying to do. It's just delusional Trump derangement syndrome. No, it's fucking not. No, it's fucking not. He, at the start of the week, he said it. He stood up in front of the world and said it's Liberation Day. I'm doing all of this because all of these countries are being unfair to America. And then on the day that the tariffs came into effect, he literally again stood up in front of the world and said, oh, look, people are getting yippy. People are panicking a little bit. This bond market doesn't look very good. I better call it. I better call an audible here. It hasn't worked. Sorry, guys. I was just joking. Don't fucking try to sell me that it was 4D chess, you twat.
Enacted, right? So this was always just going to be a reciprocation in one form or another. So it's not that surprising, I suppose, that the EU have decided or will decide not to apply it in that way. But look, I mean, I think the thing is that this sort of shows, everyone has been thinking in this last week, right? Just the same way with Geo.
All right, that's enough of him. He was basically correct, though, right? Now, two more little clips I want to play before we get on to the super thanks and the super chats and so on. Well, one of them was by Daniel Davis, who I thought gave a bit of a different take, and I thought it was interesting because he focused more on the escalation between America and China, right? Because when all was said and done, all the other countries, all the talk of Vietnam and Penguin Island and all that, and the EU and all of that, that all went out the window yesterday. But the China tariffs remain. I think it's 125% tariffs on China. They've retaliated with 84%. And the foreign minister of China has said, listen, we're prepared to go all the way to the very bitter end. Okay. So there is a comparison now of, like, in this escalating trade war between America and China, who's, like, what's going to happen? Who's going to blink first? Is Trump going to blink first, or is President Xi going to blink first? One of my kind of takes on this is that you got to understand, like, the Chinese, they're not like Americans. The Chinese system is not like the American system. For one, it's a one-party state and a dictatorship. For two, President Xi, I mean, if you look at his kind of background in history, he had a pretty interesting, like, childhood. His dad was some sort of got on the wrong side of the Communist Party and was persecuted. He watched his sister killed in front of him by Communist Party thugs or whatever. He lived in a cave for a period, right? So this is a pretty tough guy, Xi. I was actually having a look at some of the things that have happened in the past, and in China don't have the same kind of respect for human rights as other places. They don't have a democracy. Xi does not have to worry about a lot of the things that someone like Trump has to worry about because he doesn't have democracy or the distraction of democracy. And of course, he can be cruel, or he can prepare to be inhumane, as we might call it. Okay. One of the things that happened is that back in 2017, this South Korean chain, it's like a chain store called Lotte, was involved in some sort of deal that installed a US defense system in South Korea. And the Chinese public, right, this is the public, quote unquote, spontaneously organized a mass boycott en masse of this store called Lotte. And basically, as a result of that boycott, more than 50% of the stores of that South Korean chain in China closed down. Okay. I mean, this is basically who America or MAGA, if you want, or Trump is up against this. Okay. What I mean when I said that was that the Chinese are prepared to do stuff like that in the name of collective national struggle, right? To sacrifice for the higher cause of, you know, Han supremacy or whatever it is that they believe in communist China, right? I just cannot imagine a case where Americans are getting ready for a struggle like that, where they're prepared to do without, to prepare to sacrifice their own selfish wants and needs for the good of the collective en masse. I mean, one problem that Trump would have is that maybe the MAGAtards would do it, but what are you going to do about the other half of the population? Right? I mean, there's no, like, unity there in the nation. Whereas, of course, in China, they can do stuff like that. Because, I mean, let's just pretend that all of that was fake and it was just the party that made it happen. Well, the fact is, it still happened. This was actually a point made by one of the Tory boys, Vanishing Point. Vanishing Point says, if you insist on playing economic chicken with a country, don't play against a country that does not care what its population thinks and places close to zero value on human life. They will not blink. And I do think there's a case to be made here that this, like, game of chicken, as Vanishing Point puts it, who's going to blink first? Trump has already shown that when the shit hits the fan, he's going to blink. Now, I don't know what the Chinese... I mean, to me, the Chinese are completely opaque. I have no clue how they think or what they do half the time. But if I have a look at the struggles of Xi and his own, like, struggles within China and his rise to power and how he's, like, crushed dissent in the country and how he's managed to, like, ostensibly unify the nation behind him, I just wonder, like, you know, I mean, I saw Morgoth on Twitter was saying, like, yeah, when push comes to shove, the Chinese will, like, you know, eat the face of a badger, is how Morgoth put it. Are Americans going to do that for the greater struggle? I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're not. But anyway, this Daniel Davis gets into some of this of how the U.S.-China tariff war is going to go. Let's get into it.
President Trump has escalated the trade war with China yet again. Just in this afternoon, the United States officials, Treasury Secretary Scott Bissett, announced that the U.S.
Now, people may correct me if I'm wrong, but this Daniel Davis, who, as you can see, is a Bronze Star Medal, you know, he served in Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. I think he was actually going to be part of the Trump administration, or in some way he had some sort of job, but because he'd been critical of Israel, was not given the role, I think, but I could be wrong on that. But anyway, I thought his take on this was particularly astute, so let's get into some of his points.
Now imposed a 125% tariff on China. And this is in just the last few days has escalated from Trump's original comment, which he said he's going to put a 34% tariff on China. And then China matched that. And the United States said, you better not do any more. And then China says, okay, we'll do some more. And then the U.S. went to 104%. And then China went to 84%. And then now today, we've gone up to 125%. So you see, this is just continuing to escalate up higher and higher. And where this is going to go is unknown. Now, this escalation comes in the midst, though, of, ironically, we had Professor John Mearsheimer on a show earlier today where we were talking about this tariff fest, which the U.S. had embarked on, which at the time had 185 countries on the tariff list. And before we got off the air, that had already changed. And apparently the administration says, you know, actually now we're going to put pause, a 90-day pause on all the rest of those tariffs on everybody except China. We're going to continue that because they were disrespectful, I think is one of the phrases that was used. And how dare they retaliate? You had Scott Bissett, we're going to show you what he said here in a minute, where he said, look, I told people don't retaliate. And listen, you know, we got to look at this is in the real world. This is not like some parent talking to a child where they can just tell you what to do and you have no choice but to do it. If you put a tariff on people, there's going to be some response. And the response was literally all over the map. So, some of them were literally just fawning and basically begging the United States not to do the tariffs. Vietnam was one of those. And then others were silent on it. You had people in the European Union saying, all right, what are we going to do? We're going to come back with something. We're not going to take this land down either. Their retaliation was less. It was, I think, 25% in some categories, 10% in others. On top of that, that was not addressed, at least not in the comments by the United States. They just singled out the Chinese. Now, earlier this morning, before this went into the last iteration, you had President Trump explaining why he was making some of these moves and what he expected to happen next.
Not only with China, but China was by far the biggest abuser in history, and others also, but somebody had to do it. They had to stop because it was not sustainable. Last year, China made $1 trillion off trade with the United States. That's not right. And now I've reversed it. It's for a short period of time, but we made $2 billion, we're making now $2 billion a day. And Somebody had to do it. Roger actually said it. Charles Schwab was here a little while ago, one of the great financial people, and he said he's been waiting for 40 years for somebody to do what I did over the last month. And if you didn't do it, you wouldn't have a country. It wouldn't be sustainable. So I'm honored to have done it. And, you know, look, nothing's over yet, but we have a tremendous amount of spirit from other countries, including China. China wants to make a deal. They just don't know how quite to go about it. You know, it's one of those things. They don't know how quite. They're proud people. And President Xi's a proud man. I know him very well. And they don't know quite how to go about it, but they'll figure it out. They're in the process of figuring it out, but they want to make a deal.
President Trump has fired the head of the powerful National Security Agency and far-right activists.
We'll see just, you know, how eager they are to get a deal. I'm sure that they're eager and willing to interested in getting this tariffs off the table, and they don't want to have to deal with this stuff. I have no doubts about that. But the implication being that, yeah, as soon as they can figure out how to come around to what I want, then we'll be able to get this back to some sort of normalcy, some kind of a negotiated settlement. That remains to be seen, because while they are proud people, they are also, like Trump, not wanting to be bullied. And listen, you got to understand, China has a chip on its shoulder for a long time. And they're coming out of what they call the century of humiliation or something to that effect, where they have been.
Rather than watching all of this, I'll just summarize some of the best points that he makes here, because it's quite a long video. And I do want to get to go home eventually as well. What he basically says is that when this tariff regime with China comes into effect, it is going to raise prices in America, right? And it's going to make some items, especially those items that are coming in from China, significantly more expensive, okay? And then it will come down to who is able to cope under that environment for longer. It will become a question of endurance for the Chinese people and for the American people. But it will be a bigger endurance for the American people, according to Davis here, because the tariffs are levied on that side, right? They are, it's like a tax by the American government on the goods coming in. Okay, so it's done on the US side. This is something that he talks about here, which a lot of people somehow think happens the other way around. It doesn't. It happens on the American side. That means that it's the prices in America that are going to be affected by it. Now, yeah, there are all sorts of COPE arguments that, you know, it can affect prices higher up the supply chain and so on and so forth. But ultimately, it's levied on the finished good, the one that you're going to be buying in Walmart or wherever else. When you buy your iPhone, it's going to affect those sorts of prices. And what Davis is saying is, how long are the Americans going to be able to kind of quote unquote take that pain before Trump blinks again? He's already shown once that if there's a significant amount of pain, he'll back down on it. That's what happened yesterday. So he's saying, like, well, what happens where, like, is he prepared to see that through? Because on the Chinese side, they'll just stick him in camps if they need to. Right? We saw what happened during the lockdowns. You know, China had a brutal lockdown regime. Absolutely brutal. So that's one consideration. Another consideration which he talked about, maybe I'll play this bit here, is when he actually talks about the actual practicalities of negotiating with the rest of the world, right? There's the question of these 75 countries who said they're willing to talk. I haven't heard anyone else mention the logistics of what that actually looks like, okay? And this is one of the things I was trying to stress with Dan in the debate, right? It's all well and good asking Vietnam, for example, as one example, to rectify the trade imbalance, but practically, what does that look like? What do each party offer, right? At the moment, America is saying that the deal with Vietnam, as one example, or with the EU as another example, is unfair. Right. So they need to give something up. Right. The Vietnam will need to give something up. But also the Americans need to offer something. And at the minute, it's not clear what any of those negotiations actually look like. Okay, and this is why I was trying to focus in on these act like these actual details that we're talking about are important. You can hand wave them away, right? But it, when it comes down to it, what is the $126 billion worth of stuff that Vietnam ends up buying from America? Right? Or what is the unfair bit that Trump wants taken away? Right? And that now, in each individual case for each of these 75 or 190 countries, if you count them all, these are very complex things, right? Taking the entire trade relationship into account. And they have to be worked out on a case-by-case basis, right? So, how do you do that? Anyway, let's have a look. Daniel Davis talks about this here.
Where is the manpower, the qualified manpower, just the sheer numbers of human beings that know how to conduct negotiations? I doubt very seriously whether they've got 10 or 15. I don't know how they're going to conduct 75 simultaneously. I mean, is Scott Bissen going to do this? I mean, obviously you can't do that. That's an avalanche of capability and things that have to be done and decisions that have to be made and intricate back and forth and back and forth offers, counter offers, et cetera, considerations. This is an enormous situation we've taken on. And I don't know practically how that's going to be done, but people need to be asking these questions of Scott Bissett. That's not a minor issue I just raised here. I didn't hear any reporters ask that question of how this is even going to be done. I mean, he said 90 days, but 90 days for 75 countries? I mean, that's kind of crazy, you know, to have to try and do simultaneously, especially when you've been cutting State Department staff and really the staffs of every agency in the United States government. I mean, this would be a great time to have USAID on board at full strength, because they have action officers and foreign area officers, et cetera, many of which who've now been fired and they're no longer available.
And the truth is, that is true. Those staff have been fired because you, in another slop cycle, believed that the entirety of the USAID staff were troons or were diversity hires or were pushing critical race theory or some other bullshit, right? But the fact of the matter is that there were actual staffers there who could have done these jobs. Another story, I mean, I won't be able to cover it today, is that Elon Musk is probably out of his, you know, on his way out of Doge. The reasons for that are pretty interesting too. There's a channel called Visual Politic that just released a video on why Musk is probably gone. But part of it boils down to the fact that the Trump administration now wants to use that money to do something else. So the so-called savings that Musk was going to accrue, like cutting the deficit, cutting the spending through his activities in Doge, are not actually going to be realized, because the Trump admin, being populist, is going to end up spending it by giving it, like, by setting up some new department. Anyway, that's a different story. But let's a couple more minutes of this, and then we'll get on to the last video I want to play.
So I'm not sure where you're going to get the people to do this. And then the issue on any individual country, what if they don't want to agree to your deal? What if they want to try to something that's not as good as what you're hoping for? I mean, you see that in any kind of a situation, you're not going to get great negotiations. People want the tariff to be taken off, so they'll come and say, we're willing to talk. But getting them to actually pony up is something that matters, because understand this, that in every case that we're talking about there, a status quo existed prior to putting these tariffs on. President Trump said 185 countries were being unfair to us and were ripping us off, et cetera. So that means.
So somebody's saying I've been listening to too much Fuentes and Devin Stack. I haven't watched either of those guys in weeks. I've just been watching what's been happening, reading what happens on my timeline, and, you know, seeing what comes down the pike. I'm calling, as I have always done, calling it straight down the line. What the trouble is that so many of you are emotionally invested in trying to post hoc, post facto justify the actions of somebody who doesn't really know what he's doing or doesn't fully understand the complexity of the situation that he's in. As I said on the original stream, Trump is a guy who thinks that a trade deficit is bad because the word deficit sounds bad. is not, you know, he's not the 4D genius that you are. It's not 4D chess. What is happening here? So anyway, a couple more minutes of this, and then we'll get to the final video.
Is it whatever the status quo in every one of those cases were? Trump is claiming that it wasn't good for us, but that means that all the target countries in each side also were.
Well, the guy's saying, and I do, what I do understand is Trump started the week making a bunch of promises, and by the end of the week, he turned 180 on those promises. At the start of the week, my timeline was saying one thing, justifying the actions of Trump, and at the end of the week, it was being flipped round. And a cuck was being presented as a win, right? I am fed up of the merry-go-round of all of these things being post-facto justified and then the final result not actually being the result that was promised. Remember, he promised to end the war in Russia on day one. Didn't fucking happen. He promised to end the conflict in the Middle East. Didn't bloody happen. I don't need to go down the list of things that were promised and then post facto justified in this way. I've been around for, I set up this channel in 2016. I have been through new cycle after new cycle after new cycle. I've been around this merry-go-round and there's only so much bullshit I'm prepared to put up with. Okay. You can stay on this mad train justifying this wank. Okay, indefinitely, if you'd like. Everyone else needs to wake up.
Content with how things were working at that time. We're now going to require every one of those countries to renegotiate to something to their disadvantage. And for any country to do something to their disadvantage, there's got to be a quid pro quo. You've got to give something to get something. What you can't do is just tell everybody in the world, hey, y'all are all going to come together to me and you're all going to pay tribute. You're all going to agree to what I tell you, or there's going to be punishment and think that that's going to work. It's not going to. And again, I don't even know how we're going to get to that point, but there's going to be some disappointing people if you think that all these nations are going to just eagerly come in and just hand over whatever's asked for. They're going to want something in return. That's what negotiations mean. That's what I'm saying when I say that there has to be 75 teams of people who are qualified who have to know what they can and what they can't give away.
Unfortunately, Daniel, this is an administration who makes plans, you know, who makes plans on the back of a fag packet, as I said the other day, with some bullshit arbitrary formula, tries to unilaterally apply it on 190 nations and then expects that to go well. Or this is an administration who makes plans to bomb Yemen in a fucking signal chat and accidentally, adds the editor of the Atlantic magazine to it. It's a shit show. Let's just call it what it is. It's an absolute shit show. Okay. You can't talk about a competency crisis, right? For 10 years, you can't talk about IQ stats and competency crisis for 10 years, come into power and carry on like a bunch of clowns. Okay, it makes everybody look stupid. It really does make everybody look stupid. And that's all it is. Right, I mean, I can't remember that meme where the entire world is laughing at someone. Okay, retard. That's literally what is happening right now. Anyway, final thing I'm going to play, and I think it's worth listening to this because this guy puts forward the kind of MAGA argument for what's happening, right? The reason I want you to watch this guy's opening monologue is because this is how people were talking at the start of this week. And I want you now to study your timeline to see who is still talking in these terms, who has still got all of this grandiose rhetoric about Alexander Hamilton and the end of the end of globalization and all this other absolute bullshit people were trying to sling at the start of this week. All that's gone out the window now, because now it's about the very stable genius art of the deal. Okay? I want to force you, Clockwork Orange style, to listen to the shit this guy was saying just a couple of days ago.
Hey guys, I am here with another zero hedge debate. I am super excited about this one. It is the topic du jour, tariffs. Are they a good thing? Are they a net positive for the United States, or are they a net negative? We've got Spencer Morrison here, and he is an economist.
Listen, MAGA guy, Spencer Morrison, he represents you, okay? This guy represents you. So let's listen to what he has to say.
Economist, correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer, I don't want to offend you by calling you an economist.
I'm a lawyer. I'm a session instructor of law, and I'm the author of a book that's just come out called Reshore.
Okay, great. Well, I'll blame Zero Hedge for me thinking you're an economist.
Not an economist.
And then, of course, we've got my good buddy Peter Schiff here. He really needs no introduction, but Peter is with Euro Pacific Capital, and Peter is going to be taking the side against tariffs, and Spencer is going to be taking the side for tariffs. So what we're going to do right off the bat.
What I want you to do is measure the promises made by Spencer Morrison versus what has actually happened in the past couple of days and what is actually happening right now. Okay. I want you to measure the gap between the fantasy and the reality of what has actually transpired.
Is we're going to have each individual go ahead and state their position, and then we're going to go back and forth with rebuttal. So Spencer, why don't you go ahead and start?
Thank you very much. For the last 50 years, America and the American people have been sacrificed on the altar of economic globalism. Our industries have been gutted, our technologies stolen and used against us, and our land has been carved up and it's been sold to the highest bidder. And the hardworking American people, they've been raped, abused, and forced to compete for work with slave laborers in foreign lands. And for what? So globalists in Washington and Wall Street can buy cheap Chinese crap and inflate the stock market and the real estate market. They're selling out their American brothers and sisters for 30 pieces of silver. That ended on April 2nd, 2025, Liberation Day, which will be remembered forever as the day that the American people threw off the globalist yoke, when the people rose up as one to put America first, and to remind the globalists and the libertarians that America will no longer worship the golden calf of free trade, and that the Constitution does not guarantee you a right to buy spoons and junk from Bangladesh or China. What libertarians don't understand is that President Trump and the tariffs are not just about the economy. The economy is a means to an end. It's not the end itself. Economics and politics, money and power, they're two sides of the same coin. Without economic independence, like the ability to manufacture our own steel, machinery, semiconductors, there can be no political independence. America's founding fathers learned this hard-fought lesson in the Revolutionary War, but somewhere along the way, we forgot this wisdom. Since 1974, America has spent $25 trillion on trade deficits. We've been selling our land, and we've been borrowing mountains and mountains of debt to import all of these foreign goods. We've been buying the future that we should have been building. We've offshored industries making everything from the most basic necessities like ball bearings or machine tools to cutting-edge technology like computer chips and photolithography machines. America now depends on imports not just to live in luxury, but to keep the lights on, to drive down the street, to put food on the table.
Now, this is a problem. I'm not going to say that what he's saying is not a problem. I'm just saying that the notion that Liberation Day was the magic solution to all of this now looks ridiculous. As I said, it would be a couple of days ago.
This endangers the very survival of the American people. Now, the founding fathers, they knew all of this, and they learned it the hard way. They learned that the greatest threat to the American Revolution was not the Redcoats. It was the fact that the 13 colonies could not manufacture enough cloth or firearms or cannons to fight the British. I mean, how can you win a war against someone when you're buying their bullets? It wasn't until the French...
Bring the French in.
...started supplying the Continental Army that the tide turned, and they supplied over 80,000 firearms, without which the war couldn't have been fought, much less won. After the war, President George Washington wrote the following words: "A free people ought not only to be armed, but disciplined, and their safety and interest requires that they should promote such manufactories as tend to render them independent of others for essential, particularly military supplies." Now, President Washington's first major piece of legislation was the Tariff Act of 1789. That raised taxes on imported manufactured goods, and it encouraged domestic production. This was all part of Alexander Hamilton's American System plan, which he outlined in the report on manufactures, which was published a couple of years later. Interestingly, Thomas Jefferson, he initially opposed the tariffs, but after the War of 1812, even he admitted it, and I quote, "Experience has taught me that manufactures are now as necessary to our independence as to our comfort." Throughout the 19th century, America's leaders continued to use tariffs to build American industry. For example, the Tariff Act of 1816 unified the country's tariff policies, and it doubled the average tariff rate.
Now, remember, my final point in that debate the other day was the trouble with all of these historical examples is they can't really apply those lessons to the world as it stands today. The founding fathers were trying to establish a country. If they hadn't have introduced those robust protections, the British would have just come in and ate their lunch, right? Okay, I mean, the war is over, but we'll just buy up everything, right? Or we'll just flood the zone, right? And you understand what I'm saying, right? So it actually made sense in that time to bring in those protections. The world as it exists today, you can't just go back to Alexander Hamilton policy. For example, I mean, you've had income tax for God knows how long, right? You can't just change these things overnight without absolutely massive disruptions. And the problem is, I mean, I can't remember, was it Morgoth or somebody else who said that, I think it was Morgoth who first said that Trump may come as a Gorbachev who tried to reform the system, but actually the system can't be reformed without collapsing. Maybe this is what Trump is coming up against. The situation is too far gone. It's too, as you saw with the climb down yesterday and the US Treasury bonds, it may be impossible to unwind this system. The system's got too big, too complex to unwind in this way. So you can't just go back to doing what Alexander Hamilton did, right? Because it made sense at that time. But the risks of trying to go back to that policy quickly and rapidly without a really well thought through plan, which clearly these people don't have, may be greater than the rewards that you will get. Anyway, let's carry on.
America had the highest average tariff rates in the world throughout the 1800s. And these relatively high rates, they remained the norm until the 1970s, when those tariff walls came crashing down and the gold window closed. It was tariffs under Alexander Hamilton's American system, which were supported by the bulk of our founding fathers, and every president carved up on Mount Rushmore. These turned the United States from a colonial backwater into an industrial superpower. By the 1870s, America was the second largest industrial power in the world, and by the 1880s, produced a quarter of the world's industrial output. And at the end of the Second World War, America produced half of everything that was manufactured.
But as I said, changing historical circumstances. After the Second World War, America also took over Britain as the global hegemon and as the kind of guarantor of the world trade system. When that happens, the incentives change. So maintaining a protective tariff economy, which America had in its rise, in its rising action, no longer made sense, because a free trade zone is also a power control zone, as I talked about before. And when you're the number one power, it generally makes sense to become the champion of free trade, as the British Empire was before that. And if you go back and have a look at my video, even Genghis Khan or the Mongols at some point became champions of free trade once they controlled a large enough area, right? So this is one of those things where it's not like a the economic policy is always a matter of contingency. And also, as I said, when empires are in the downward swing, they tend to try to like return to tariffs to hold on to what they got, or to try to like stave off the losing their power in some way. The British Empire did this in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and you know what happened there. Pretty much all empires have followed that trajectory where, you know, initially they're protectionist, then there's a period of free trade, then on the downward swing they try to return to protections. But then what happens when you, like, I mean, what was the Suez, if you have a look at the Suez crisis or whatever, there's a hard check on the power. And it could be, it really could be that what we're witnessing at the moment is the equivalent of an American Suez or something. It's America realizing, actually, we can't really run this show anymore. And there are hard checks on what we can do, right? And maybe Trump's gambit has kind of brought this into focus a bit more.
America lost that top spot to China in 2010. Today, China produces three times the industrial output as America at purchasing power parity. And that gap continues to widen. America bought and paid for the rise of China.
I mean, the guy asking, was the repeal of the Corn Laws a good thing? I mean, you can look at it two ways. On the one hand, from a conservative point of view, from a reactionary point of view, it destroyed an entire way of life, and it destroyed vast swathes of British agriculture. On the other hand, the repeal of the Corn Laws facilitated the Industrial Revolution, and it meant that the British Empire could be fed on cheap American grain, which is what happened. That's what happened. And the incentives of the British Empire as an entity, I'm not talking about the British people or from the peasant eye point of view or whatever, I'm talking about the power entity. It made sense for the British to pursue a policy of free trade in that time. Of course, when we say, quote unquote, free trade, it was never really free. You can go back on my videos for there. The power and political mechanism comes first. What free trade means, where you're the hegemon, is bringing people into your zone of soft power influence and having informal control rather than formal control. Always better for the empire to have informal tentacles, right? And if you can think about being part of the free trade network, almost like being part of a spider's web, right? And that's what the British Empire was to a large extent. It was only later, really, where they had to formally take over places, you know, actually like formally go in, invade and conquer, or something like the scramble for Africa, which is what people think of when they think of empire or whatever. Those things were really like kind of late or more desperate developments when it was on the downward swing. And, you know, the free trade, the British kind of laissez-faire system, by the end of Queen Victoria's reign, was already on the way out. The end of the British Empire was basically protectionist from, at least the First World War until the end. That was the trajectory it followed. So it's like, well, the question is, it's always like right at the time, it feels right at the time, but there's a much larger question, which is like, can anything really arrest the shape of empire? The pattern of decline and fall that I talk about in Prophets of Doom, it's very difficult to arrest that because these things have a life cycle, right? And, you know, you get all of these kind of Caesar figures or great men or whatever who try to turn the ship around, right? But ultimately, they can keep it going for another 10 years, 20 years or whatever. But it's already kind of, you know, it's already set on a certain trajectory. So, and you can view even somebody like Lord Palmerston. You think of Lord Palmerston at the height of the British Empire in theory, but actually a lot of his actions were kind of desperately trying to like hold on or expand in various areas, you know, when it was clear that other powers in the long run were going to come and eclipse Britain, Germany being one, America being another one. And you can actually read all of these things in contemporary accounts in the British Empire at the time. Point is that the American Empire is kind of in its, you know, it's somewhere along its life cycle where it's on the downward swing now. And this should be obvious to everyone, really. But anyway, let's continue.
Now, 5 decades of economic globalism has brought America to its knees. What Liberation Day stands for, and what President Trump is fighting for, is to put America first and to free America from the fate that awaits all peoples who embrace globalism, be it Babylon or Rome or London, the confusion of tongues and the destruction of the nation. Liberation Day is a proclamation. It's a triumph. It's a celebration of the fact that America is not a shopping mall. America is not a hotel. America is not an economy. America is a nation of people, of brothers and sisters, of husbands and wives, fathers and sons, bound together by blood and by tradition, by love of land and language, by honor.
But can you imagine he said this on the morning, right? They did this debate literally minutes before Trump pulled the plug on it. Literally minutes before he was coming out with this shit.
And by our faith and our trust in God. I'll leave the floor open to you, Mr. Schiff.
Okay, thanks, Spencer. Peter, what's your position? Yeah.
And while I'm talking, if Spencer could find a way to up his volume, because I have a hard time hearing him. I mean, George, you come in loud and clear, but
okay.
Spencer's like a whisper. Well, first of all, I do think that we may remember April 2nd, kind of the way we remember Pearl Harbor Day, you know, except we bombed ourselves instead of the Japanese. Look, you know,
that's all we need for Peter Schiff. Got in there with a zinger right at the start. So there we go. Those were the promises made of Liberation Day yesterday morning. On the morning of the 9th of April, Spencer Morrison came out with that eloquent speech evoking the founding fathers and the brotherhood of people in America and how the nation is strong and is going to bring back manufacturing and make, you know, the new golden age and all of that. And within literally a couple of hours, Trump was like, yeah, sorry, guys. I almost fucked the US Treasury bond system. So, whoops. So I don't know what Spencer Morrison is saying today. Like, is Spencer Morrison going round after giving that speech, being like, still Liberation Day is is going to be remembered in history as the day where he took our nation back? Is he still doubling down on that? Or is Spencer Morrison now running around saying, this is all us of the deal. We're going to have a great deal, the best deals with each of these individual nations. I don't know. Go and check him out. So let's hit some super chats and some super thanks here. I forgot to open the entropy, but I will do so now. Let's have a look at the entropy. I'm afraid that this is devastating for MAGA as a project. Absolutely devastating. It really is. And I for one am very glad that I am not paid to try to come up for justifications for all this. I'm glad that I don't have to justify it all or to come up with copes for it all. Anyway, let me have a look now at the super thanks from the week, and then we're going to hit the super chats on this stream. So in terms of the super thanks, we've got quite a few for this week because we didn't do the super thanks with Dan, did we? So we're all the way back to this one, I think, from 7 days ago, is it? No, from 8 days ago. Is Donald Trump a Time Lord? My gosh, that was a whole week ago that video came out. The sheer amount of media produced and ingested makes it difficult to digest information, and we simply can't keep up. No, you get out, says Tim Cornish. No, you get out, Tim Cornish. And this is the thing. My fear for Liberation Day and this whole tariff debacle, and surely it has been a debacle, is that in a month's time or in 2 months or even in 2 weeks' time, or in 2 months or in 3 months' time, this will all be ancient history. Nobody will ever talk about it again. Just like nobody really talks about the rumble in the White House anymore. Do you remember the blow up with Zelensky? Ancient history now. Right? I mean, that was so many news cycles ago. I remember I still had dark hair. I've got white hair now, even though it was only a month ago. You know? So, yeah, maybe. Alphonse Rides Again says, I don't know about this Poe guy, and his arguments seem based on ignorance. So this was the video that I did with Horace last week called Does Britain Secretly Control American Foreign Policy? So he's talking about Richard Poe. Alphonse Rides Again says, I don't know about this Richard Poe guy, and his arguments seem to be based on ignorance of what the LSE, City of London and Chatham House, etc. actually are. That said, I think the argument of some, like Tom Luongo, make is that the City of London is a separate transnational institution controlled by international finance, which continues to have a dominant role in world affairs, independent of and sometimes at odds with the British government. Maybe worth a stream with Pete Q. Studio Reyna on the same video says, I would argue that the Habsburgs were more effective than the Rothschilds. The Habsburgs essentially created the concept of international order and orchestrated the coalition that defeated Napoleon. The Rothschilds would have lost if not for the Habsburgs. This single question could determine whether British elites control the world. Do we know whether or not there are British powerful banking families who control the world, not a nation, but rather a family dynasty? Also, there are still very uncertain debates as to about what a nation is. If you look at the East India Company, the nations were to serve a company. I've yet to hear an argument that counters that logic. Good post. I mean, my big question is, do the Habsburgs and the Rothschilds still rule the world, or is it the 21st century and all that stuff happened in the 19th century? Question to be asked. Okay, I know Emmanuel Macron worked at Rothschild's bank or whatever, but that doesn't actually mean that any one of these old European families still secretly run things, like the Illuminati. LT7S7 says, this is on the Weimar Republic stream that I did with Charlie many years ago. He says, Hi, AA, I've been watching for a while, recently joined the channel to support it and access the archive. I like to download your streams and listen to them while working. Any idea why the old cigar streams seem, among others, are not available to download? Actually, I have no idea why they're not available to download. They should be able to. You should be able to just download them using any a program like VK Video Downloader, where you just have to log into your account through the program and it will let you download it. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to download them. How are Trump's... Oh, hold on a minute. John Lister says, this is on Unpopular Opinions, episode season 2, episode 3, Majid Schools and Joseph McCarthy. I remember that stream. That was, I remember Daughter of Albion was on that, giggling because of that weird Sheffield mayor called Majid. Do you remember when he went and sat on the table? That was bloody years ago, that stream. John Lister says, watching these old streams is surreal. The way everyone talks about the Conservative Party is if they are fundamentally on our side, but led astray by their need to pander to leftist votes and not yet realising that the Tories were always progressives at heart. If there's one positive development over the last few years, it's our ability to distinguish friend and enemy rather easily. Clear them all out. There needs to be a new start. I believe that stream was all the way from like 2017. That's how long ago it was. Studio Reyna says, so what is a nation? What is a company or a people? What is the global American empire? A global corporation or a global empire? A company formed India into a nation. Now we're supposed to believe that there are 180 sovereign nations. Yeah, it's a good point, Studio Radar, a good point. Holy Spatula on last week's on the Office Hours with Dan, how Trump's tariffs are changing everything from a couple of days ago, says, AA, regarding Trump's tariffs, one thing no one seems to talk about that I would like your thoughts on is that the cost of Chinese goods is on the UK, USA, European side and not the Chinese side. Yes, absolutely. I don't know why people assume it's on the China side. It's on the tariffs are put on the in the country that is imported to. Half of Amazon, Etsy, etc., is just buying something in China for £2, selling it in the West for £20. Most of the cost covers labor, rent, and taxes, etc. But even if you put 100% tariffs on China goods, it would just be £4. Temu and Shein were born out of Chinese people working Westerners, working out the Westerners were doing this. But now they can do it for much cheaper. I don't see how this would achieve bringing back manufacturing. I imagine it would just be absorbed as a pseudo tax. Yeah, you're probably right, Holy Spatula. You're absolutely right when it comes to some of those goods on Amazon and so on. That is exactly what was happening. People are just taking advantage of the you know, of the difference between the two economies and of the costs versus the retail, you know, the retail price, essentially. You can make a buck off it, but essentially the person who's making the money is the retailer, right? On the, you know, on the Amazon side or whatever. And in fact, there's been plenty of guys who were being made fun of by MAGA types who were saying like, oh, well, I'm going to go out of business now because I've been like, I set my business up doing this and now I can't do it anymore. Right. And they were being made fun of, I remember. So lots of some of those guys will just go out of business, surely. Bissotun says on what makes French culture so unique. The French had a lot of cultural and linguistic influence on pre-revolution Iran stemming from the 19th century. That is true. And if you go back to my Adam Curtis on the Iranian Revolution, there's a whole episode on exactly how the French Revolution affected the Iranian Revolution. Golden Age Puritan says, tariffs are on everyone from India to small unpopulated islands in order to eliminate a loophole for China. Otherwise, they would send their product to an untariff country and repackage it as a product of that country. My workplace has received aluminum or aluminium from Pakistan that when opened had Chinese labels and markings inside. I assume that the tariffs are ultimately aimed at China. Well, if that was the idea, Golden Age Puritan, that is all up in smoke now because those tariffs are back down to 10% with everybody else. The only ones that remain were on China. So there's a bit of a, you know, post hoc rationalized justification out the window, innit? Studio Rayner says, or that core problem you're talking about, well, China can just do that now, can't they? And get around it. Studio Rayner says, this is on an older video called One World Government, a Warning, from back at the very start of the channel revamp from last year. He says, you know, with the rise of the managerial elite and the general public's perception of Israel, I think the UN might end up destroying Israel. Israel already has a ton of internal division, and ironically, attempting to fight a war with the UN seems to be slowly backfiring. Regardless of managerialism, the most significant geopolitical tragedy since the Industrial Revolution was the collapse of the British Empire. Imperial preference being replaced by GDP has primarily caused the global depopulation crisis. It's similar to what happened after the Mongol Empire collapsed, the Black Death and depopulation everywhere. The British had one move they could make to restore their empire, ally with Iran, after the US becomes weaker. After the Ottomans' defeat, the British should have allied with Iran to fill the power vacuum left behind. That foreign policy mistake is why the British Empire collapsed and will also be why the GAE collapsed. The heartland was Iran, not Germany. The British Empire collapsed, failing to realize the world's oldest superpower might one day be a long-term powerful ally. Take some goddamn accountability. Well, Studio Rayner, I mean, you've got to remember that Iran in the middle of the 20th century was not particularly strong power. There was a king there called Reza Shah, who was like a kind of who was trying to modernize Iran desperately through most of the 20th century. He actually was making overtures to ally with the Mustache Man in the 1930s. So Reza Shah made an alliance with Hitler, during which weird things happened, like Hitler declared, for example, that all Iranians were the true Aryan people and could automatically become German citizens in a 1936 amendation to the Nuremberg laws. Right. So all of that happened because of that positioning. When World War II happened, they couldn't risk the Iranians being on the side of the Mustache Man. So there was actually a brutal invasion of Iran ordered by Churchill in 1941, whereby the British just took Iran, got Reza Shah off the throne, installed the last Shah, you know, the Shah who was overthrown in 1979, because if they hadn't have done that, they wouldn't have had enough oil, which was being produced by the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, you know, to fuel the war, right? So that's what happened there. That's what happened. So in a way, if you consider the alliance between the last Shah and the British Empire after the Reza Shah was removed, they did ally with Iran in a way. Trouble is that there was a guy called Mossadegh in the early 1950s who decided he wanted to nationalize Iranian oil and take it off the Anglo-Persian Oil Company. His reasoning was that the deal that the British had signed back in 1906 or whatever it was, to give monopoly drilling rights to the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, was moot because Iran had a new constitution, and it was an old, like the old Qajar dynasty from back in the 19th century. The dregs of that signed it. But then Reza Shah came along, and now is the new Shah. So that, like, Mossadegh's argument was like, well, that agreement that we signed all those years ago is now moot. And of course, that was when the CIA got involved. But the upshot of that was that the Americans basically ousted the British out of their monopoly position in Iran and installed a new situation where the Seven Sisters got involved, right? So now Iranian oil was a kind of Western free-for-all, not just BP, Anglo-Persian Oil Company, but all of the other companies were allowed to get involved. And then just before he got overthrown by the revolution, the Shah started talking about not doing a deal with the Seven Sisters because that deal was due for renewal. And well, you know what, you know the rest. I think the Americans told the you know, the generals of the Iranian army, don't fire, essentially let the Shah get overthrown. Maybe they fancy that they could make a deal with the Ayatollah, and you know how that worked out. So yeah, the British were basically ousted by the Americans through the Mossadegh situation. anyway, C123 says, literally every single comment on this stream is pro-tariff and anti-AA. But us true AA old heads will never waver. Down with Trump, down with retarded tariffs, and down with all these lotus-munching slop merchants. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they look, you go back and look at those comments, they probably look pretty stupid now, don't they? Kaza Peach says, how do you get powers who want to be, how do you get the powers that be to want to introduce policies such as this? This was on my Madagascar plan video, which was called I Found a Solution to Britain's Immigration Problem. How can you get the powers that be to introduce policies such as this? And how can the political will be created? Honestly, I mean, I think coming up with a plan in the first place, I genuinely believe that if you presented that, you know, obviously you'd have to soup it up a bit, but if you presented something like that in Tony Blair Institute, I reckon they might go for it, or some version of something like that. I mean, it's already being done it's not a million miles away from what Trump is doing in El Salvador, as an example, or what Maloney is doing in Albania, right? And Blair is up for the Albania plan. We came up with it. So it's only a small step. I'm just trying to push it in the right direction. Golden Age Puritan says, thinking that Americans can't work in manufacturing again is as absurd as the idea that white women in the West can't bear children anymore just because they don't. So how much doesn't mean they can change and quickly. I don't disagree with that. That was a Jeffrey Sachs argument, really. I don't really buy that. I think that people would gladly go back and work in factories. In fact, I was having a conversation with people who had worked in factories. I remember working back to my old McDonald's days. I know it's not factory work, but it was pretty minion kind of menial labor in McDonald's. I remember working in there fondly. And a lot of people who've done factory work actually remember it fondly. I was listening to the radio the other day and this old woman said, oh, I've worked in this factory all my life. It's like my family, basically. So people do actually it's not the worst job in the world to have, because it gives you a sense of belonging. Okay, it may be menial. Okay, it may not be particularly mentally taxing, but you've got to remember that most of the population yearn to be the peasantry again. So I'm not against that. What I was arguing on that stream, and what I still maintain, is that this mechanism of focusing on the trade deficits is not going to bring back manufacturing. It's just not going to do it. Fingering Vietnam and trying to get it to rectify its trade imbalance is not going to fix the problem for all the reasons I pointed out on that stream. Samsoborn says, I've gone from an Alex Jones MAGA boy. So this was on my sloppulism video from yesterday. 5 tricks populists use to manipulate followers. A lot of people saying that was a classic. If you're new to this channel, maybe watch that one. Maybe watch the sloppulism video from yesterday. Sam O'Born says, I've gone from an Alex Jones MAGA boy in 2020 to fully concurring with everything said in this video in 2025. A few years can change you a lot if you're willing to actually admit you had it wrong, or at least knew before then what you know now. Though just observing what is happening in front of you. Yeah, I mean, what was that line? Some people can't see past the end of their own nose. And when it comes to the sloppulists, basically, you've just got to call a spade eventually. Sadly, 80% plus of the population have almost no ability to do this. If you're one of that 80%, this channel is not for you. You can go and watch Tim Pool. You can go and watch Raise a Fist or any of these people. Knock yourself out, right? This channel is not for you if you're one of that 80%. If you are actually able to call a spade, and just see things for what they are, maybe this channel will be for you. The bleak-looking future makes it more important than ever to have things that you're passionate about above all else and can drown all this noise out and give 100% commitment to them. I'm an aspiring kickboxer, and I can change my walkout song each fight, mainly stuff that makes me chuckle. AA, is there some track associated with our crowd or indeed this channel that I should have for my next one? If you can think of a good one, I was going to use the good, the bad, and the ugly theme this time. Thanks, Sam. Well, you could always use,
country in which I've spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
I think the name of that track is by a dark synth artist called Masked. Masked, capital, all caps, Masked. If you're looking for that actual track that I used on the promo code Mandy, I can't remember the name of the song now. It's a dark synth artist called Masked, and I think it's called Vandalism by Mast, I think, is that track. Let's carry on. He's an Argentinian dark synth artist, I believe. Hansel says, it is the empire of spectacle. It is alchemical sorcery. Read Hart and Negri. Read and listen to Douglas Hogan. I mean, I've got Hart and Negri here. Their book Empire. In fact, they've got a trilogy, the Empire Trilogy, it's called. I've got all three of those books here. Even though they're Marxist, they have some pretty good stuff on exactly how the US Empire has worked. Same video, Super Duper Man on the Sloppylism video says, very important video. I would love a video stream on political strategy. I feel most watchers, particularly those who are newer, have acknowledged that we cannot vote our way out of this, but they do not see an alternative path. Keep up the good fight, AA. This was on yesterday's Deepest Law. Alphonse Rides Again says, the lions led by donkeys meme is a leftist trope to delegitimize the pre-war British ruling class. Every nation in World War I struggled to adapt their tactics to new military tech and wasted men in huge numbers in frontal attacks. The level of incompetence in the Russian, Austrian, Italian, and even French militaries was far higher than the British, who actually did pretty well in pioneering combined arms operations, use of tanks and aircraft, etc. Well, it's very good to have that counterbalance to the lions led by donkeys meme. I'm wondering if there's any like revisionist histories of World War One that kind of rectify all of that. I have no idea. Run up your thermostat on the Sloppylism video from yesterday says, this video is as beautiful as American beef made from 100% American cows. I will show this to friends and family to explain why I won't be voting for Polly there. Our would-be Sloppylist in chief will probably not make it anyways. Even his will-be voters went from being excited about him to knowing he will probably suck. But, quote unquote, we have to get rid of the liberals because they know he won't do anything about immigration. People will end up feeling the same way about Nigel and every other Sloppylist eventually. Not sustainable. Absolutely. See the containment for what it is. One of the things I've always stressed on this channel. One thing I hate, it's bullshit. Another thing I hate, it's trying to get me excited for what is essentially distraction and containment from the bottom line, right? While you've been memeing around, making fun of boomers losing their pensions, saying shit like, your beef is weak, you're poor all week. Meanwhile, nothing has been done about the demographic situation in America. You know, I don't see mass deportations at the rate that they are required. So the bottom line, the number one issue, is still being distracted from, as far as I can tell. And in fact, if I was being uber cynical, I would say that this siege mentality of America against Europe or America against all of the rest of the world is a well-known strategy they use in sports psychology. One of the people who was notorious for using this sort of mentality was Jose Mourinho of Chelsea fame. Jose Mourinho always wanted to inculcate an us against the world mentality for his teams, okay, where he was willing to kind of play the heel in public to get all of his supporters and all of his team believing that everybody else was against them, okay, because it's a great unifying factor. If you believe that the entire world is against you, it's a unifying factor at home, okay. Now, if I was being uber cynical, maybe, just maybe, the animus of USA against the rest of the world has helped bring American whites, American Latinos, and American blacks, the three big races in America, together to find some sort of American national unity at home. Right now, I'm not saying that's definitely happened, but if I was being uber cynical, I'd say, well, that's one possible political outcome for it. Maybe through this this Jose Mourinho-like siege mentality, you can actually try to facilitate some sort of coming together as a nation. I don't know. Let's carry on. Yes, so let's do the super chats now. Port Film Co-op says, how do you rate the chances of a Steve Bannon run in 2028? And what might he be able to achieve, if anything? I would say, I'll go on record and say that there is 0% chance of a Steve Bannon run in 2028. 0% chance. It has been set up for the likes of J.D. Vance to step in, right? If it's not Trump trying to go for a third term, it's been set up for some sort of ersatz populist like Vance to step in. Zero chance for Bannon. Zero. He is a backstage operator, right? I watched an interview with Steve Edgington, who's a great guy. He was good, one of the few really good journalists out there at the moment, Steve Edgington. And he interviewed Bannon. And honestly, during parts of that interview with Bannon, my jaw was on the floor. When he said to the right, he was talking about the Germans. He said, let's face it, Germany, if we didn't bomb you into the Stone Age, you wouldn't have a constitution. You're not allies, you're collaborators. Steve Bannon said that. My jaw was on the floor, right? There is absolutely no chance that Bannon is going to be the president talking like that. Zero. Just none. He is a backstage operator, a Svengali figure, an organizer. A mouthpiece. He is not presidential material, I'm afraid. Let's carry on. Port Film Co-op says, what's the deal with Sargon constantly backing populism like it's 2016? Aren't you guys friends? Has he not heard your arguments? I have no rational explanation for this, so what's the deal? Well, you're going to have to ask Carl that, because he's a big boy. He can speak for himself. But, maybe he's one of these people who just constantly needs to, support populists. I mean, in fairness to Carl, he very quickly turned on Nigel Farage, right? And he's been pretty solid on that. He's still, I don't know if he's being strategic or he's got friends in America or something. He doesn't want to, out of, because he wants to be invited to Tim Pool or something. He doesn't want to badmouth Trump. I don't know about that, but he turned on Farage pretty quickly, to be fair to him. He also says, surely those behind the... Although he did encourage people to go for Farage, which in retrospect is obviously an error when other people were counselling against that. So there is that as well. Port Film Co-op says... Surely those people behind the curtain allowed Trump to do this for a reason. So how might they have benefited? Probably beyond our compression. It's the enemy that plays real 4D chess. The only explanation, if they allowed him to do it, is the sleaziest one possible, which is it made a lot of money for his rich friends. One of the, he said, now is a good time to buy, right? Well, there are some very rich people could have made an awful lot of money in the past couple of days or so, which is, again, banana republic level corruption. But this is the guy who issued fucking me like clown coin on the day of his inauguration and shit like that. So Port Film Co-op says, this just in, Donald Trump to stand down and J.D. Vance will be taking over. That is a lie. Port Film Co-op, there is absolutely zero chance that is happening. That is a lie. Absolute lie. Jack Egg Kaminsky says, many said at the start that Trump is showing his big dick energy, but what I got more of is chaotic energy that overly emotional women create around themselves. This does not feel like the energy of a magnanimous leader. I agree, Jack Eck. And I increasingly get you could say I got Joker energy is how I'd put it. Right. Joker energy. Like, what the fuck is he doing? That's what I get. Now, one cope argument that I've seen some people make, and I think possibly Carl may be more along these sorts of lines, is that Trump is Loki. Trump is uh, the you know, the Kekistan agent of chaos, right? It doesn't really matter what's happening because we want to tear the whole system down type thing. So it's actually good. I am much more skeptical. I think this discredits everybody. I really do. It discredits the right in the world, and it's massively discrediting to MAGA as well. Massively discrediting. Let's not forget, the system's basically said, like, we'll give you a go after all this resistance and blah blah blah. Let's give the guy a chance. I think a lot of people were prepared to give Trump a chance, to prepare to like run this experiment to see what happens. You know, like I said, the regime was kind of at peace with it because of you know, all the reasons I said before. All of those things, yes. Trouble is, you can't fuck up on this level and expect to save face. It's just, it's an embarrassment, and he's not going to come out of this cost-free. His reputation as a strongman leader around the world has been damaged. Okay? You've just got to imagine if it was President Xi behaving like this, or Putin behaving like this, okay? We would not, and he'd come out and he'd rattle his saber in front of the world, and then he'd back down in the space of a week. Everybody would be like, what the fuck are you doing? And in our eyes, it would just destroy Putin's reputation or Xi's reputation or any other leader's reputation, okay? These things can't come cost-free. And I'm afraid the copes of MAGA don't reach anybody else but MAGA. Right, the world is bigger than just Trump's little base. Okay, and this is one of those things that has been a problem. When J.D. Vance, for example, gives these speeches, it's like it's like these speeches are designed for captive dreamer. Like it's designed for like these fucking retards online. You can't run a country like that. You cannot run a country solely appealing to, you know, online anons. This is the real world now. So, you know, yeah. And it's like I said, the ultimate effect is it discredits all of this, and it makes it massively less likely that you're going to get the things that you want. Because I fear that the ultimate upshot is that the system, the establishment, the neo-libs, the shit-libs, the left writ large, are going to ultimately come out the other side of this strengthened, right? Just imagine this. If me, with this channel, with all the stuff I've talked about, and my, you know, populist delusion and Carlyle and all the things I've talked about and all the things I've taught in this channel over the past God knows how many years now, if I am watching Rory, I made a video 2 or 3 weeks ago called Why I Hate Rory Stewart. Okay, I've got a visceral hatred of Rory Stewart. If I am watching the rest is politics and agreeing with what Rory Stewart is saying, me, imagine what your average person is doing. I am not just representative of one man. There are thousands, hundreds and thousands, perhaps millions of people who are having exactly the same reaction. Any libertarian who supported Trump, who knows a little bit of econ, is now thinking like, this guy is a fucking raving lunatic. Any rational person, and I have seen dozens upon dozens of people in these spaces with followings, with bodies of work, come out and say like, this is bad. Right? So even online, Trump is down to the captive dreamers of this world. It's a problem, and you really, ultimately, you don't want to be associated with it. I will carry on. Studio Reina says, and so rather than people attacking me, they've got to come up with a. Hold on a second. We are losing a lot of support here because we fucked up. Right? You cannot gaslight people into treating this massive L as a win. As I said at the top. Studio Reina says, there is a dam that Taiwan can blow up that would essentially destroy China. It's suspicious why they built that dam, as if it wasn't intentional. Pator says, MAGA backfill brilliance into Trump's mess. They want to rewrite failure as strategy, faith over outcome, myth over reality. It will backfire. Of course it will. Remember the essay I wrote at the start of this year, Against Cope, Against Captive Dreams. Because I am sick of this go-round. Our advantage when it came to the information space was that we told the truth when our enemies were lying. Okay? When our enemies were saying things like, you know, a man can, you know, a woman can be born with a penis, or, you know, whatever thing, you know, all the fucking shit they came out with, they were demonstrable lies. Or when they talked about, you know, when it was BLM, or when it was, you know, lies about who does crime with the race stats, or whether it was who was actually in control, all these things, our advantage was telling the truth historically. Okay, it was having a better view of what was actually happening in the world that the authorities were lying about. Now we're in the situation where mainstream media, even mainstream media, is actually telling the truth about things, and you are put in a position where you have to lie for a government, in this case, Trump's government. I am not prepared to lie. Okay, I will never lie to you intentionally. Other people may have different views. Okay, I saw there was a meeting the other day with a bunch of social media influencers and Benjamin Netanyahu, Tim Pool, Dave Rubin, and so on. Right, they went and actually met with Netanyahu. God knows what they talked about, but maybe, just maybe, those people may be influenced by the fact that they're quite close to power, you see, right? I am not having meetings with Benjamin Netanyahu, so I'm therefore not going to lie for Benjamin Netanyahu or Donald Trump or anyone else. It takes your money and you makes your choice, okay? In my view, our advantage is that we tell the truth. If the truth happens to coincide with what the mainstream media is saying, we have to have the courage to say, yes, this is true as well. Okay? Sometimes even the BBC will tell the truth. And when it comes to the objective fact of what happened in the US Treasury bonds and what Trump did yesterday, there is a fact. There's no amount of spinning those facts that make it a super 4D chess plan. Cringe Walker says, tax evasion was the most highly cultivated art of the Gauls. Olwen Brogan on Roman Gaul. Vanta Black says, I hate liberals, but the MAGA crowd is just as bad. If you go in my back catalogue, I've got a number of essays that I wrote in 2022 and 2023 on my Substack. One of those essays is MAGA as the Fulfillment of the Kali Yuga. That has had some pretty penetrating predictive power, I have to say. But I've got another earlier one where I think it was called the Anti-Woke Scold or something like that, where I actually predict that one day MAGA would become more annoying than the SJWs. Back in those days, we used to say things like the SJWs, remember? The woke. The MAGA would become as annoying, if not more annoying, than the woke. That moment happened. And in fact, it even happened before this news cycle. It happened in the last news cycle. Can't remember exactly what it was now, but it was some bullshit about Russia, or it was some. There's always some bullshit with them. So I think they've. I mean, honestly, MAGA jumped the shark, right? And if they hadn't done it before, they've definitely done it now. After the shit show of this past week, Studio Reina says, you know, the Great Depression actually raised the birth rates, and without it, the US probably would not have won World War II. I wonder if the Depression was done on purpose. Makes sense in hindsight. I very much doubt it was done on purpose, Studio Reina. Psalm 153 says, what could have been strategic negotiated trade has turned into MAGA clown world fail. AA cuts the slop and serves fine French cuisine as usual. Fallout predictions for all of this? Well, thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. And you know, my French cuisine, my French beef is beautiful, and your beef is weak. one of my favorite moments in all of this. I might have to cut that out and add it to the soundboard because it really tickles me. My predictions for the fallout are what I said on the debate the other day. The left is ultimately going to be strengthened. The neoliberal establishment is going to be strengthened because basically MAGA looks stupid. So it discredits the right and it credits the left. And there's going to be dozens upon dozens of people like me and like Alex Kashuda and like Eugypius and like, I mean, there's been loads of them, Keith Words and just the whole kind of right that aren't part of this MAGA-tardery that are just like, you know, a lot of people are thinking, do I want to be associated with this fucking shit show right now? Because it makes me look bad to be associated with this. It makes you look bad. It makes everybody look bad. And, you know, I would say that that is a problem. That is a problem because MAGA have decided to just become like the lowest IQ cult imaginable, whereby all they're doing is coming up with copes to justify the actions of Dear Leader. Right. Well, that's not why anybody signed up to the dance. Right. Go back and watch my video yesterday. You signed up for this because you want to decrease immigration. You want to sort out the demographic issues. You want to get, you know, all of the things that we've talked about. But instead, you're now in the mode of trying to justify all of this, coming up with post facto justifying copes for the American government, essentially. Oh, right. Funny how that happens. So, I mean, I have no intention of becoming one of those. I think I've made that clear. Yeah, but mindless cheerleaders, essentially. So it will be, I mean, it's almost like an IQ sorting mechanism. And this particular issue, you know, has almost been like that, you know. Brulaham says, I sent a DM, two tweets linked to a thread about Canada migration, absolutely mental, and explains why nobody trusts Jeet Poilievre to fix the principal issue. Okay. There is Quebec immigration data sent by Brulaham. Oh my God, look at that. Yeah. It's almost as bad as Boris Wave. It's almost as bad as Boris Wave. So, yeah. Yes, it's dire. There's your quantitative easing with people. TP says, it's all a red herring for the central banks to be bailed out once more. The globalists are getting ready for the ultimate casus belli for stealing everybody's bank deposits. Next up, control grid slave tokens. Well, I hope that's not right, TP. I hope that's not right, but we will see. William Harris says, Trump is just a tool to get white men to buy back into a system that hates them. Now, instead of burning the system, they're ready to die for it. Well, I mean, some bozo did write an essay talking about that once upon a time. Don't know what happened to that bozo. Some people say he fell off. Some people say he's lost it. Some people say he's become like a CNN journalist, they say. I tell you, it's like I'm living in the Truman Show. It really is. Every day I think, what happened? Like, is there like some like sliding doors reality that I walked off? You know, everybody's just mental. They really are. More super chats. O2 Tom says, 90D passes. Tariff resumes, inflation rises, Fed increased rates, $10 trillion of debt refinanced at a higher rate over the next 12 months, military cut, end of empire. Well, we'll see about that. I mean, I strongly suspect that when this 90-day period is over, this tariff regime will not be... It may come back in a kind of cucked and weakened state, but I do not believe that we're going to see anything near as grandiose as what that guy was saying you know, that Spencer Robinson guy was saying about Liberation Day. I just don't think it's going to happen. Studio Arena says, what happens when two managerial states decide to fight? It's like how the Arabs took over when Rome and Persia collapsed at the same time. Yes, I mean, who knows? Because one of the issues is that we've never seen two powers at this scale go at it before. It's the scale of China, the scale of America that is scary here. Big, much bigger in many ways in scale, in terms of firepower and nuclear weapons and even manpower, than British Empire versus the German, Reich, of course. Poods, Vision of Confrontation says the fourth dimension is the cope dimension. Oh, maybe I should need to spend some time in the fourth dimension because maybe people are happier coping, but I can't ever be happy lying personally. Maybe I've got like some psychotic defect that means that I do not respond to social pressure, to friends, to, I just like, you know, it's like truth Tourette's. I must tell the truth regardless of what anyone says, you know, but maybe there are many of us like that. Maybe Ed Dutton's got a bit of that truth Tourette's, doesn't he? Came out over the fallout over his Jonathan Bowden book, where he just couldn't understand why people, you know, didn't want their kind of head canon version of Bowden as this kind of mythical hero in their minds, shattered by the actual truth of his life. And he couldn't get his head around that. And in the same, I mean, I understand intellectually, of course, why people need their delusions, why people need their copes and so on. I just don't care. I just don't care about all of that. You know, I mean, probably some of the Americans are saying like, look, we understand what he's saying. We understand it's bad, but we need to lie for the good of morale. For example, we need to lie for the good of morale. Yeah, that's not my role. I'm a truth teller. I'm going to tell you lies for the good of your morale, whatever one of those is, you know. Pood says, should we not in the US even care so much about this issue? Surely it is only a major blow to the gay. Should we not in the US even care so much about this issue? Surely it is only a major blow to the gay and the MAGA movement. I do think we should care about it. It's of global significance. It's not only of significance to Americans. What happens in America affects what happens here massively. You know, what was the old saying? When America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold, right? If MAGA goes completely tits up, you can kiss goodbye to getting these Keir Starmers and so on out ever, because that's not going to happen. You know, it matters if the entire quote-unquote movement, I've never really believed in movement, but it matters if everybody is discredited by this. It really does. It also matters in other ways. Like, for example, I haven't really checked to see what happened to them, but, you know, I've got a pension. I've got, you know, investments and savings and so on. I mean, I remember reading years ago in a book saying like, just don't look at it. You'll drive yourself mad if you track it. So I haven't even looked. I don't know. Maybe Trump cost me $6,000. Maybe cost me $20,000. I have no idea. I haven't even looked because I, you know, for my own mental health, I don't even look at that sort of stuff. You know, it could be up, it could be down. I don't know. You know, there'll come a day where I check, but until that day comes, I don't want to know. So it will affect people on that level, right? Trump's actions actually affected the UK gilts market, right? The gilts market was up, it was affected by about 5%, you know, which is, again, remember what happened to Liz Truss? I mean, kind of a parallel thing was happening in the UK gilts market yesterday as well, until Trump intervened. So it does. What Trump does, unfortunately for us, does affect us. It does matter to us. Another thing that it's worth remembering, of course, is that if you are German or French or Italian or British or wherever you happen to come from, there is literally no reason for you to become a cheerleader for what Trump is doing for his American First platform. The first question should always be, is it good for us? Right? This is like 101 stuff. Is it good for us? And again, there's a question mark over that when it comes to what has happened, because as far as I can see, he launched a plan that was never going to work and then cucked on it within a week. So I don't really see what the good is of that, really, for anybody. Azora says, as a protectionist attacked by MAGists because I said he will fail without an industrial policy and general tariffs don't work, this week was a vindication. Many such cases, Azora. It's not really about... I think that basically everybody would support America reindustrializing and indeed Europe reindustrializing. We all support that. The question is focusing on trade deficit the mechanism by which to bring that about? Or is industrial policy the way to bring it about? And long-term planning, maybe. Not back-of-the-fag-packet calculations. You get the impression that everybody who's involved in this administration, much like their leader, is flying by the seat of their pants. Okay? Now, it may be all right to fly by the seat of one's pants doing real estate deals, or it may be all right to fly at the seat of one's pants when you're fighting for your political survival, or where you're beefing with Jeb Bush, or where you're, you know, that stuff may play well in domestic politics. But, you know, to use another wrestling term, this is where the big boys play. Do you remember that? This is where the big boys play. He's in the global arena now. He's in international relations. And he's up against forces that, you know, he's up against the world class. President Xi, Putin, Erdogan. Like, these guys have been around. You know, some of these countries... you know, the European Union, whatever you want to say about these players on the world stage, you have to come at them with a plan. You have to be serious. You have to know what you're doing. And otherwise, you're going to end up looking very foolish very quickly in front of the entire world. So, you know, it was a big risk what Trump did, and unfortunately has not paid off for him on this occasion. You know, yes, no risk, no reward. I agree with that. But sometimes if you can go big and land flat on your face, and that's what's happened here in a spectacular way as well, really spectacular way. Make It Doc says, guys, fundamental economics don't change. An economy built on bullshit has no foundation. It doesn't matter how long it takes, the bullshit will go away. Yeah, that's true. Uttred, son of Uttred, says, good day, AA. Do you have any recommendations on a book, on books on Roy Jenkins? This goblin seems to be the instigator of every social media, of every social malaise in the UK from what brief research I've done into him. Unfortunately, no. I do not have any, I do not really read books on individual like political figures like that, like political biographies. There's a whole genre of people who like read like the memoirs of politicians and things like that. I've never been interested in that. So I don't really know that much about Roy Jenkins. What I do know about him is that he was very instrumental in posing this country, put it that way. A lot of the social liberalism in legislative terms that came in was as a result of the machinations of Roy Jenkins, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because I believe he's one of the few prominent Welsh politicians. Rito Hayner says, remember the Signal chat story? That sure mattered. That was the moment, by the way, when I said that MAGA jumped the shark, the Signal chat story and the fucking copes around that that I was reading was another major recent L. Because it made the administration look like amateur hour. It looked stupid, okay? And people coming out with justifications for all of that. There's nothing these people won't justify. And at the end of the day, it's a gaslight. I won't be bullshitted. You might love, you might get off on that, in which case you can bugger off to some other place and get off on it in your own time. I don't want to see it in my chat. I don't want to see your copes around me. You know, I'm keeping my spaces cope-free, slop-free. Anyway, he says, remember that Signal chat story? That sure mattered. Watch people somehow forget this one too. I see no reason not to go maximum tiger jockey. Yeah, the trouble is with this one, though, you can't basically almost crash the global economy, and especially the American economy. You cannot damage the entire world's confidence in the American ability to repay its debts and then just go like, whoops, guys, sorry. On to the next one. I mean, if anybody can do it, Trump can do it because he's a time lord, as I've talked about before. But I think this one is different. I really do. Maximal, it's easily the biggest L MAGA has ever taken, right? Because you could say, well, okay, but what about the debacle with J6, or what about 2020, or what about like all of these other times where on paper you'd say, well, MAGA took an L. The thing is with those, there was a sense of injustice there. There was a sense that we were up against the evil regime. That, like on this was purely down to Trump, purely down to him. And unfortunately, it hasn't worked, and it's been a shit show on top of it. It's embarrassing. It really is. And I'm sorry to say that as well, because I had hopes that Trump may actually do some good stuff in this term, right? But it seems to me that, I don't know, it's like, I mean, I hate to say it, it's almost just like there's a crazy old man who's a president, and he kind of like doesn't really know what he's doing. That's what it feels like a lot of the time at the moment. And even worse, he's surrounded by all these slimy operators like Lutnick and Hegseth and Vance. And I don't like any of these people. These people are slimy. I don't like them. They feel like the lowest sort of Machiavellians. And I don't trust those people. And I also noticed that they're always looking in terms of, I mean, the media, this is one area where I disagree with the mainstream media a little bit. So if you listen to Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell, they're saying like all of these people around Trump are just sycophants and yes men and so on and so forth. There's some truth to the fact that they're obsequious. That is true. What I don't like is the fact that there's an element of it that they're kind of conniving behind Trump as well, where like, you know, it's like they're kind of, Trump says something and they're interpreters of it, and then they try to like use their interpretation of what Trump is saying to advance some policy or some agenda or some messaging that they've got. And if you go back to the Signal chats, that was very much the kind of vibe I got off Vance. You know, how should we frame, what's the messaging around this going to be, you know, blah blah blah, what the president really means is. And it, to me, it's just like, it kind of reminds me a little way of King Lear or something like that. You've got this kind of like, you know, king who's losing it a bit, you know, and all of these little snakes around him. I don't really like that dynamic so much. Cringe Walker says, I will admit that I just like the instability for my call and put spreads, but it's pretty clear that Trump is firing from the hip with no rhyme or no reason. Well, thank you very much for that, Cringe Walker. And you, sir, have greater honesty than many of your fellow compatriots. Ozzy, the Be a Thief, says, Trump is a complete net negative who will be used to discredit the right wing talking points for years because of this. He has pissed off the entire world. Yeah, I mean, it can't be overstated enough. He has pissed off the entire world. And I think that the trouble is, there's this thing that people talk about is political capital, right? He has burnt through a lot of political capital, and even more importantly, a lot of goodwill, right? A lot of goodwill. there was a moment just after the Trump assassination attempt in the run-up to where he was elected, where I felt like, even in this country, where people have not, in this country, people have not generally liked Trump that much, you know, the general public, the normies I'm talking about. But I felt that there was a kind of change where people were willing to give him a chance, and the tone was different. And he'd kind of like, just through sheer perseverance, through all the slings and arrows, kind of won the admiration of a lot of people, you know, grudgingly, or they were just willing to give him a shot. Unfortunately, this has kind of just wrecked any of that goodwill. I'll give you an example. I was in the like the Village Green store yesterday, buying my lunch or whatever it was, buying a drink, and there was like a little exchange. Now, that little Village Corner store is pretty much like Tory Central, really posh people. They've got money, you know, they're all well spoken. You imagine they all vote Tory. And there was just this little exchange, the old guy behind the counter and the woman, you know, she was buying a newspaper, and they were like, oh, trouble with the news, never anything good. And then someone just said, oh, yeah, you know, Trump. And they both just rolled their eyes. Yeah, just God, you know. And there is very much that feeling now. It's not TDS. It's not like old-fashioned Trump derangement syndrome, like back in the lunacy period of the culture wars. It's more like, oh my God, this, you know, he's lost it, basically. You know, that sort of goodwill that he had is completely gone now. And I think people are going to have to come to terms with that sooner rather than later. Peter, and that's just in this country. I am positive it is happening in America as well, because so many of the voices that have come out against this have actually been on the ostensible right. Right, Elon Musk was not really up for this. Elon Musk is probably, you know, going to be out the door soon for various other reasons too. So it's like the coalition that he built is falling apart. The wheels are coming off the program, and the disparate and contradictory elements of it are being exposed in the most brutal possible manner. Okay, and the worst thing is he's made MAGA a laughingstock, and people associated with MAGA a laughingstock. That credibility, right? I mean, there's a difference. They never like a lot of people never liked Trump, but he was formidable. He's a tough guy. I want him on my side. Like, there was still a kind of grudging respect that he had from a lot of people. And I feel like a lot of that is just going to be gone now, because what he's done makes him look like a joke. I wish it wasn't the case, but it is, unfortunately. Peter says, I'm sick of Trump opponents. Sick of Trump opponents, tired of passing every single time he farts. Say what you want about Biden, but for a while, the presidency vanished. Kamala taking over would have been a bigger win for the right. Well, that's been Devon Stack's view for some time as well, of course. I'm not sure if I go that far, because she was pretty bad as well. But I did put out a tweet saying, do you remember the Halcyon days where competency crisis just meant Anthony Blinken looking a bit forlorn while Joe Biden fell asleep at a meeting, right? Because this bunch of clowns actually make Anthony Blinken and Lloyd Austin and that administration, they actually make them, and the bloody tranny admiral and all that lot, they actually make them look like semi-competent because they've been that bad. That's the issue. You can't talk about bringing back American excellence and merit and dismantling DEI and the competency crisis if you're not going to be competent when you come in. And they've been the opposite of competent, I'm afraid, on every single one of these things, right? And it's not just one thing, it's accumulation of dismal failures now that are building up. Okay, remember the rumble in the White House with Zelensky was meant to be the end of the Ukraine war. And it ended up with Putin not backing down and Trump just impotently saying, I'm very pissed off with Putin. I'll put more sanctions on you. Well, that was just a flat Russian win. And it made Trump. What did it do? What did it really do at the end? It made a circus show out of the White House. There was an embarrassing episode where the official negotiator, Steve Witkoff, went on Tucker Carlson and gushed about how Putin had prayed for Trump and blah, 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 only for a week later Trump to just fire, oh, Putin's pissed me off. Now forgotten about because everybody's talking about this, right? Then forgotten about because the signal bullshit happened in the week in between, if you remember. Right? There's only so many of these fuck-ups that you're allowed, right? And don't forget, this is right at the start of Trump's presidency, where his political capital was relatively high. It's been rapidly drained. And I don't know if Trump is going to have any political capital left after this back down yesterday. Dissident Audio says, any recommended books about international finance? A good Machiavellian one? I don't really know any off the top of my head. It's not really my area, international finance, I'm afraid. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any. The Devastator says, I honestly don't know how you deal with these idiots each day. It would drive me completely mad. I'm thankful that you're still here and will keep donating until the end. Keep up the great work, AA. Well, that was $80 from the Devastator. Thank you very much, sir. One of the most generous of all the super chatters. And I do appreciate it. You know, I often rail against the chat, but I do appreciate those people who are able to stay sane with me in this. You know, the thing is, I market the channel as something to help you keep sane in a crazy world. I will always tell the truth, whether it's one side lying or the other side lying. This is one aspect of sensible centrism, I guess. Cancel Culture has just sent a super sticker. Peter Bocken says Trump admin has already put $100 billion more into the Pentagon, undoing the entire Doge idea on a whim. Well, there we go. That's something else. I mean, that I didn't get all the way through that visual politic video, but that's the sort of thing he was talking about. PK Plasma say arbitrage bond futures and deliverable bonds. Big Hot says, I love how Magatards unironically thought the response to the stupid line go up politics was stupid line go down politics. Well, you play stupid games and you win stupid prizes. AJ says, hi, AA. I found you on Lotus Eaters. On this, you're entirely correct. A risky gambit that has cost MAGA political capital with no payoff. All it did was hurt portfolios and made Trump look reckless. Absolutely, AJ. And this is the thing. Anybody with half a brain cell who is honest is going to just say that. Okay. It doesn't mean that you can't still hope for good things from the Trump presidency. But, it does, like, you don't need to come up with all these copes to pretend like it was really a win and all this sort of stuff. It's just not. And when, like, the trouble is, the more times you go to that dishonest playbook and you are intentionally lying to people to justify some political project that you have, the more and more goodwill you're ebbing away, basically, by your refusal to tell the truth. Because people will know not to trust you anymore. They'll be like, oh, well, that person is not on the level. They're clearly a shill, okay? And again, as more and more of these episodes build up, you know, it'll be easy for you to identify the people who just tell the truth from the people who are basically shilling. Studio Reina says, there is a debt. Oh, we did that one. For some reason, we did the Super Chats backwards today, and I don't know why that is. Studio Rainer says, I wouldn't discredit the man who crashed the pound this early. He has a record of success. Ignore Trump. Let's see the results first. Trouble is, Studio Rainer, the results are in, mate. The results were yesterday. That is it. You're not going to... Liberation Day was set up to be this massive thing. And within a week, he backed to back down. That was the result, right? It's no like, oh, and just another 2 weeks. Just in just another 2 weeks, Hillary Clinton will be in Gitmo, right? We've been round this go round before. At some point, you have to learn. TP says, if they attack Iran, first thing, go to the petrol station and buy fuel. The Straits of Hormuz, 30% of global supply. Lying about history is for this certain amount of women who haven't even listened to Jerma Rudolph. Jeremy E. Johnson says, isn't crushing the international financial system the quickest way to end the game? The thing is that if you do it too quickly and recklessly, all you'll do is create an awful lot of suffering for an awful lot of people, and then politics goes out the window, and people will just be like, well, Trump did this. You know, I have to beg on the street now, and it's Trump's fault. I have to sell my house, and it's Trump's fault. I am bankrupt, and I used to be a millionaire, and it's Trump's fault, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's not as easy as doing that. You know, there would have to be, like ideally, you'll do it in a way that doesn't just wreck millions of people's lives, because the actual political fallout would be, the political solution to that would be that they would turn against you, or they would turn against Trump. TP says, in other words, pin it on the rube. Trump being the rube, two birds, one stone. Oh, that's another way of looking at it, yeah, I suppose. And Studio Rainer says, I know for a fact that Biden died in 2022. What's worse, a dead president or tariffs? I do not think that Joe Biden died in 2022, mate, I'm afraid. I think he's still alive. I think he's still alive. All right, I think that'll do. In terms of the super chats, I think that's everybody. I have to go. I've got a pickleball game tonight, so I have to jump in my car and get to the gym. I will see you soon. This was an emergency stream. I'll be back next Monday for the continuation of The Character of Peoples by Andre Siegfried. Goodbye.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.